The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go.
So far, the rain is a gun.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for September 21st, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed, or you can find us on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, click the link in our show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red rectangle that says sponsor this podcast, and you could set up a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, my co-host and friend Case Lowe. And Case, Dangerous Gate 2021 happened a little over 24 hours ago, and it's an interesting time to be a Dragon System fan. I think that's like my big takeaway from this. How are you doing, man?
Look, this company is living dangerously right now. They're living on the edge. There's parts of this show that I really, really liked. There's parts of this show that I am just not sure I'm locked in on. And that is unfortunately the story of this year. You know, it seemed like in 2020, obviously in the second half of the year, once they got out of their empty arena setting that they spent the spring in and moved into the limited capacity setting in July, you know, it was really easy to come on this podcast every single week because almost every single show they had in the back half of last year was legitimately entertaining, whether it be one of your big five shows. I mean, Dangerous Gate 2020 was terrific. Your Kobe World, Gate of Destiny, Final Gate, those all delivered. The Kobe Sambo Hall shows, the Osaka number 2 shows, the Cork and Hall shows, those all had a ton of life to them. And we're in September of 2021 now, and I can't pick out my favorite Cork and Hall show this year because I'm not sure there's been one. We're going to preview a Kobe Sambo Hall show that looks pretty dreadful on paper. And even this big show, it was good, but it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And I have a feeling I'm lower on this show than most people. I don't know Mike's thoughts on really anything on this card. My review as we're recording was just published on voicesofwrestling.com. So, Mike, I don't think you've had a chance to read it yet, so you don't really know what I think. But this promotion's living dangerously. You know, they could close out the year with a real bang if they hit their stride in October, November, December. But with the way things are laid out right now, it could also go the other way, and I'm very, very fearful of that.
Yeah, so I did get a chance to look at your review, Case, and I don't know if I think that they're as in a precarious position as you do, but I do think that they are making a bold swing here that it's going to be really years to see if this was the right move. And what I'm referring to is the fact that they've essentially spent the entire time since coming back from lockdown really getting the young generation, the future generation, I don't know what term to really call the all these debutees pretty much since the OWE split, post-split generation. I'm just going to call it post-split generation.
Well, I will say we need a flashy name for them, because one thing you're going to hear a lot about on this podcast is Kota Minoru onwards and that generation, but that time will come. But your point is?
But my point is that everything that they've done has been setting up this generation to be ready. Not necessarily now, I would say. Of course, there's people from the generation just previous to that, Shun Skywalker and Eita, who got the football and ran with it. But really, what we're seeing and what we saw with Kaito Ishida, with the attempt to was a hip-hop Kakuta, just overall the treatment of SB Kento, and now Kota Minoru, and now the newest people out of the Dragon Gate Superstar Machine, and Riki and Ishin and Hashi. It's something that, like, in the moment, it's not the constant, nonstop, just satisfying endings that we got a lot of last year, and what I think, like, the real special sauce in the Dragon System is. I think what we're going to be seeing now is, in 2026, the fact that Kota Minoru headlined a Dangerous Gate show against the most successful singles champion in company history before he turned 23. That's going to be a big thing. It's just, in the moment, it's kind of difficult to really, the matches are solid to a little underwhelming, like you're saying, but it's something that it's sitting through this to see how everything plays out, which I find fascinating. It just makes it sometimes a little bit frustrating to watch. And I think that was my big takeaway from Dangerous Gate, is that there's a lot of stuff that I really enjoyed, but overall, like, it's under a film of just being a little frustrating, I would say.
Let me ask you this, as a man that is everything Elite, you, Mike Spears, you have a very close eye on All Elite Wrestling, and this is a tired topic, but it's one that I haven't heard from you, so I do briefly want to get your take on it. Has American wrestling, in really every facet at this point, returning to stadiums or packed bingo halls, whatever it is, full capacity American crowds, has that hindered your enjoyment of Japanese wrestling, whether it be Dragon Gate or Stardom or whatever else you're watching, given that they are still in this silent environment?
You know, personally for me, I have sometimes it's a blessing, sometimes a curse. I contextualize things very, very heavily. So looking at what's happening in Dragon Gate, I don't apply what happens to Dragon Gate to what's happening in All Elite Wrestling, because just the uniqueness of running a promotion in America right now versus the restrictions about running a promotion in Japan. And I think that it is natural to compare one against the other, but it's something where you could really only compare it, I would say, against themselves over the last 12 months. And that's like, with like a lot of attendance stuff and everything, it's so hard to compare things. So you compare things in like a similar scenario, like this Dangerous Gate show for Dragon Gate sold 600 more tickets in Oda City this year. Now, some of that is that the restrictions aren't as strong, but I mean, when you compare a promotion against itself, what they've done over the last 12 months has at least been successful, one would say, or the fact that demand is still high enough. But comparing, like, okay, especially like being at All Out, case, we both were there. It kind of breaks your scale of expectations of what wrestling should be like right now, given everything. So I think it's almost unfair to kind of compare what's happening in Japan to what's happening in AEW to what's happening in Mexico to what's happening in Europe, if that makes sense.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair and balanced, Mike Spears. I know you're someone that enters every day looking to bring fair and balanced news coverage to the wrestling world. I largely agree with you, but there is a part of me that felt like, especially in this main event, you know, in 2020, I felt like I was able to deal with it. I was actually able to cope with, at least in Dragon Gate, the lack of audience interaction better than most, because I do think at the end of the day, good is good. And I can tell when a match is legitimately great, and yes, the crowd can help it to some degree, but I don't think Dragon Gate really, I'm going to say, needed that assistance in 2020. I think what they did was so top-notch, so high-level, that I was able to cut through the lack of noise and go, this is phenomenal. And I know it's phenomenal. If I had a crowd, it would be even better, but it's still as it is great. This show, I just felt like it was pretty dire at times, and it's a real bummer to think that say, take the main event, for example, you know, Kota Minoru locking in the Sol Naciente for the first time on Yamato. And really that entire finishing stretch with him going for the gong and then going for the flash pin and then going for, you know, his cross face and the Sol Naciente, then again and again and again, and Yamato continues to survive all these moves and it falls into silence. It's just like, oh my God, like I don't know if this match is a match of the year contender or not. I gave it 4.5 stars and I'm not sure if I underrated it by a quarter star, if I overrated it by a full star. You know, it's starting to play games with me because I have a comparison level. Obviously, us being at All Out, for those that do not know, Mike Spears and I drove to All Out together. Mike told me on the way there, hey, after the cage match, be sure to stick your hand up in the air and give me your star rating on one hand, because we were sitting in a similar section. And of course, once the Lucha Brothers got that 3 count, I'm throwing up full 5, baby, throwing up full 5 for Mike Spears in the Now Arena. So that match did quite literally break a scale for me. But going from that environment to the pretty sterile Ota Ward Gymnasium is tough. And I really started to feel it on this show in particular. There are a few matches here that I just wanted some life for. And this is the first big show, even more so than Yoshino's retirement. This is the first big show where I think the atmosphere actively hurt it for me.
And it's something that it's not like that the Dragon Gate crowds are silent, and especially in comparison for when I try to, like, case you know this, but for like listeners, I went through a phase maybe 4 or 5 years ago where I was Mr. Watch Everything. I would do my chores while watching ROH TV. That's how the Iron kind of nickname was happening, because I was doing my ironing while watching ROH on Sinclair. But then I realized like how miserable things were. So like I pared it down to basically what I cover and what I enjoy, and I think Dragon Gate gets the reactions. It's just so muted, and it's only like really in comparison to like, and this does kind of go against what I just said about comparing against yourself, but like New Japan crowds, like when I've dipped my toe in, and the work's all fine, like I'm not going through to watch a lot of House of Torture stuff, okay? So you know, I'm precious with my time management skills, but
one of the worst things to happen this year is that the first two nights of the G1 got good reviews, because I was like, oh fuck, I have to watch this now, and I really don't have the desire to. Like, I watched Shingo versus Ishii,
right? Yeah,
and look, it was great. I gave it 4.5 stars. But there was an Okada Tanahashi match sitting on the next show. I just don't want to watch it right now. But people are telling me it's great. It's like, oh my God, I got to go watch this now. Whereas I'll let you finish in a second. But much like you, I used to watch everything. Luckily, a lot of stuff went behind a paywall. And I said, you know what? I don't need to watch this anymore. And then Big Japan got bad and Noah got stupid. And I have always had very little interest in All Japan, and DDT I can still pick and choose from, and it has left me with New Japan and Dragon Gate. Thus we are in a very similar boat.
Yeah, but like you, but in the stuff that I will heat check in with New Japan, everything feels kind of staged with like the applause and like all of like the way of like showing emotion in a way, which, you know, it makes sense. Like for a promotion of that size with that organization that's over it, they would do very well about getting a crowd to be engaged in the way they want to. They put on a lot of idol shows where they have like fans with like synchronized like light tubes that they play with. But, that there's still stuff on this show that I felt like got like authentic and actual reactions. Like I felt like the Hashi brothers already showed a level of crowd connection that was kind of startling in a way. But yeah, that like the fact that this was the time that Minoru unsealed the Sol Naciente and everything with it, like, felt fine. That maybe he should have worked on the application of it a little bit. He might be a little bit too big to actually try to pull off that kind of submission. But like the fact that the crowd wasn't getting into it as much, it's something that has to be taken into account. But it's also something you could compare it back to. Like there was other times that the promotion was doing great things, so the crowd was reacting, but because it wasn't like the reaction that for everything up till 2020 we're used to hearing. It's just something that I feel like we're constantly resetting our expectations with these crowds. And I think there was reaction there, but your greater point of like, for like a moment like Minoru bringing out this move, not getting an audible huge reaction or even like a shock. Like, remember when Shin Skywalker came out at Ideon Arena last year and the crowd actually had gasps, like that kind of stuff. Like, you, like, that was the kind of thing you'd hope for with Kota Minora doing Masato Yoshino's like ultimate move. And we didn't get that. And that is something that I feel like that there is contextualizing it, but it's also the fact that he debuted it and there's no reaction and you can't go back and kind of change that.
Mike, I understand you have some news for us. Would you like to share with the class?
Okay, so I have talked to people within the promotion, and a lot of this was some of the stuff that was coming out of this show and the lead up to the show. For a little bit of an injury list report, I'll say this. Like, we like talking about the injury list some case, like to keep everyone abreast of situations. I asked for two people in particular. I did not ask about Kikuta. I just assumed that with like that kind of surgery, it's a we'll see you when you see you thing, just because of like a rehab and like with the joints there. Nothing on Kikuta. He has had the surgery. Who knows when he'll be back? I would be stunned if he's back before 2022. The two people I asked about, the first one was KZ about his ankle injury, his recurrent ankle injury. We've talked about this in previous weeks about how he had hardware put in to set a nasty broken ankle from about 10 years ago. And it just the irritation and like the fact that you have metal stuff in a body. Sometimes the body doesn't like it too much and you have to replace it, remove it, and let it heal again. I asked, like, should we expect to see him back this year? And people within the company have said that within a few months. However, that entails taking his stubbornness into account. So KZ, potentially, you know, I mean, he pretty much has been off shows for the last few weeks. Expecting him back, I would say, by the end of 2021, which I think is like a embarrassment and riches in a natural vibes act that has really kind of like found its footing without him around.
Yeah, I will talk about it when we get to their match, but I there's a lot to like in natural vibes right now. And as I said last week, KZ getting hurt is unfortunate, but KZ going away will likely be a positive for him in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that's a better kind of scenario than what I was personally expecting. The other big injury news that I have heard, and I don't have definite time frame that we're talking about, but Shun Skywalker. Let's talk about Shun Skywalker and the Diamante match for 1 second, at least for it, just so I can put in context his injury. So talking with people within the company, the injury that was talked about that was focused on in his ankle in Kawagoe, that's a shoot that happened. And essentially this was as much of a match that they could have basically with him on his bad ankle, because it was that injury. And then the next day being Dangerous Gate, I don't think he's gone under like a huge evaluation and kind of seeing what the route forward is with him. I know he's off the show this week, so I think it's one of those things that over the next week or so things will be more clear about Shun Skywalker. So hurt ankle, hurt the show immediately before Dangerous Gate, they worked into the match, and that was kind of like a best case scenario for him. And we'll find out more about the overall situation in upcoming weeks. Next time I'll hear back about it, I'll bring it back on the show.
Masquerade, even without Shun Skywalker, not lacking star power, both with Kota Minora, who headlined this show, and with Dragon Daya, Jason Lee, and La Estrella, who kicked off Dangerous Gate 2021.
Yeah, I have one more news note before we get onto that guest
star. Oh, all right. This is a surprise for me. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, everyone's incredibly happy with the Ihashi brother debut. Like, exceedingly happy about it, and with the context of Ihashi Brothers, they're special. They get this kind of debut. And even though we'll talk more about it when we talk about the debut, about that step forward, there's other people in this future class to more keep an eye on when they debut. Hayakawa, who I've been really high on, and Fujiwara are like two of the names to really kind of keep an eye out there. But everyone was really pleased about the Ihashi Brothers debut.
Hey, Mike, you know who else was pleased with the Ihashi Brothers debut? this guy, but we will cross that bridge when we come to it, my friend.
Yeah, so sorry to interrupt you there before we got into the show itself. So Dangerous Gate 2021 was on the 20th from Oda City Gym General Gymnasium. Attendance 1510, which massively up from last year, which was right under 1,000. But again, as I said, restrictions are different, and they didn't have to build a dang cage there. But still, huge jump up there. Opening match on YouTube. This was a really smart match to put up on YouTube. It was for the Open the Triangle Gate Championship match. It was the champion team of Masquerade, the aforementioned Dragon Daya, Jason Lee in Australia, versus the RED Challenger team of Eita, Kaito Shido, and Hyo. Hyo got the win on Daya with the Black Panther clutch after a box attack. Masquerade failed in their third defense. RED become the 73rd champion team.
I'm excited about this RED team. I think this is a really interesting combination of guys. Like I talked about last week, Eita has not been a Triangle Gate champion since he held the belts with T-Hawk and UT in the summer of 2014. And Kaito Ishida, 6 years in his career, has never been a Triangle Gate champion before now. So I think it's an interesting combination of guys. And Hyo has been a really solid third man in a number of RED trios at this point. Thought it was a good match, not a great match. I just want that signature big time RED versus Masquerade match. And for some reason, these guys are crushing it on like the afternoon show in Fukuoka. But these big shows, I'm still waiting for that one that I can point to. In a way, almost to argue it for a feud of the year position. So it's a selfish argument to make, but I don't know. What did you think about this opener?
Yeah, I was 3¾ on it. I thought that, just echoing your thoughts, this was, I don't want to say the RC Cola version of the Masquerade versus RED match, but this was a competent effort, but this was not like the insane matches that we were seeing in December through February. I thought Estrella, again, because we were honest and had a tough talk about Estrella before. Each time he has a solid performance for a while, I feel like I need to compliment Estrella. Estrella looked great here. Jason and Kaito, they just have tremendous chemistry with each other. We've known this for a long time, getting to see that as well. And then Estrella going for a stucca splash and then getting kangaroo kicked by Ishida was like the funniest moment for like the first half of the show for me. But I thought this was all really solid, and I think this is a big moment for RED, because RED, spoiler alert, goes 3-4-0 on the show tonight, and making a big deal about being the third year anniversary and that being talked about a lot. This could be the big hype before the fall, and I know that I constantly say this, but the fact that they make a big point about RED doing so well and this being an anniversary, they don't, that those things aren't being made points of for nothing.
I thought Estrella was a particularly interesting person to watch in this match, because it's the first time we've seen him in a pretty big environment since Dead or Alive, when he had that awful performance, that he's been in the ring without Diamante. And instead of doing a million different things, I thought he chose his spots pretty wisely in this match. I don't have a memory of Estrella doing a bunch of different things in this match, but the things that he did do, I remember, and that was getting rolled like a bowling ball out of the ring by Kaito Ishida. That was him taking going for the splash, like you mentioned, then taking 2 feet to the chest, which looked absolutely brutal. There was a little bit that he did here, and I think it went a long way, and that's a pretty big performance from him. I echo your thoughts on Jason Lee and Kaito Ishida. My God, those guys are just unbelievable. And Dragon Daya will eventually hurt himself on that. I don't even know what to call it when RED just throws him up in the air. Oh. It almost looks like a gym class activity.
That's exactly what I was about to say, Case. I don't know if they still did this when you were in elementary school, but it used to be a big thing that they would get out the parachute and you would like sling things up in the air.
Yeah, everyone would, like... yeah, exactly. It looks like the giant parachute you would have in gym class, but they're throwing Dragon Daya in the air. It's not a piece of fabric. And look, I love the spot. The air he is getting on the spot is unbelievable. It would make Darby Allen jealous. I am very afraid he's going to hurt a shoulder or worse on this spot because it looks so good and so dangerous.
I want to see a box jump competition between Dragon Dia and Dante Martin.
Look, we know if Dragon Dia, look, I'm not going to get into this argument again. If Dragon Dia went to All Elite Wrestling, he would fucking blow people's minds. If he went anywhere in the world, people would be stunned at how good he is. Again, somebody once showed Genki Horiguchi a video of El Hijo del Vikingo, and Horiguchi went, what's the big deal? Dia can do all of that plus more. And I think about that every time I see this guy wrestle.
Yeah, so this was pretty interesting. We both kind of were seeing this happen before. We both kind of expected this to happen. And, you know, there's other stuff that happened with RED and Masquerade that I have two Galaxy Brain ideas that I'll bring up towards the end of the showcase. But one of them is a result of this matchup.
Okay, very interesting. I look forward to that.
All right. So that was the YouTube match. If you have not, if you're not on the Dragon Gate Network and not aware of this, they air the first match of each show that they stream live for free on YouTube. They made a concerted effort before. They've done this with Kaito Ishida and Keisuke Okuda. This time they did the Trial Gate match. It's up on YouTube. It'll be up on YouTube into perpetuity. It's worth checking out.
Agreed.
All right, then we led into what I was originally going to have such a big problem with. Combined, I think we can just take these two matches together, Case, to be quite honest. Match two and match three.
Go for it.
Combined 5 minutes and 17 seconds of ring time. Case called it. The match two was Kenichiro Arai and Punch Tomonaga versus Gamma and Problem Dragon. Punch one with the punch clutch in 4 minutes and 6 seconds on Problem Dragon. Then a 3-on-1 handicap match, Takashi Yoshida versus Konamawa Chikawa, Sachi Okubo, and Yosuke Samaria. He got a triple pinfall in 1 minute and 11 seconds.
Look, I have nothing to say when it comes to the Punch Tomonaga tag match, other than the fact that Jay ribbing Punch Tomonaga as hard as he has been lately has been just absolutely delightful. It is my new favorite thing of Jay just firing shots from the hip at Punch Tomonaga during those matches. As for the Takashi Yoshida squash, look, Yamada was over the Dreamgate champion and they just booked Yoshida to win a 1-on-3 squash match. That is terrifying, because the last time Yamato held this belt, he had to defend the Dreamgate against Takashi Yoshida, not once, but twice. Once at Champion Gate, headlining Champion Gate weekend, mind you, and once in the Dead or Alive cage. And I just can't handle another one of those matches.
Yeah, there's a lot of questionable routes that the Dreamgate could be going on off of the results on this show.
Yes, very much so.
But yeah, no, I mean, this was exactly what they were like. Ho-Ho and Jay on Dangerous Gate. One, the number two announcer wrestler feud of the year behind CM Punk and Taz, going on between Jay and Punch Tomonaga. I think it's entirely one-sided, by the way.
Oh my God, Jay, he wasn't as bad here on the Corkin show this month. He was so brutal, and I was cackling over it. It was fantastic.
And here's the thing, newer listeners, he's absolutely honest in all of his assessments.
No, there hasn't been any tweets of justice for Punch Tomonaga, stick up for my man Punch. Everyone's like, no, Jay nailed it. He is exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. And then Ho-Ho Loon, there might be a little bit of discord between this tap at, or the shut up or roll up tag team, because they made a big deal about Yoshida being the crap out of Ho-Ho the show before this and putting him in it through a jackhammer. It's like, I didn't want to be involved with this after that. So great commentary as always.
Yes, I have larger, more serious thoughts on this commentary team later, but for these two matches, they were absolutely hilarious.
Just was tremendous stuff there, and let's hit on the next match. This was a match that I was a little bit questionable about, but I was pleasantly surprised. This was a six-man tag, unaffiliated trio of Ultimo Dragon, Masaki Mochizuki, and Naruki Doi versus the Natural Vibes team of Genki Horiguchi, UT, and Funky Jackie Kamei. And really, like, this is something we've been talking about. Horiguchi took the Lobmai Straw from Ultimo in 10 minutes flat. And what ended up being one of the sleeper, probably the sleeper match of the night, I would say.
Yeah, this is, and I talked about this in my VoicesOfWrestling.com review. this is just ideally to me what pro wrestling looks like. This is just a match that brought in everything I like. You had fiery youngsters, you had strong characters, and you had simply just an in-ring style of wrestling that I prefer to just about anything else. It's not a great match, not one that even found my spreadsheet, and this is the match made for me, but God damn, I thought this was fun. This was just such a fun match to watch, and I'm curious to see if you found the same enjoyment that I did from it.
Oh, absolutely. This is Funky Jackie Kamei's best match since becoming Funky Jackie Kamei, right?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like that there is something in this match for anyone, to be quite honest. I mean, you had UT and Ultimo getting to have some fun figuring out inventive ways to make each other hate each other with submissions. Funky Jackie Kamei wanted the smoke and was bringing it, like was really concentrated in this match. And it, there was, Ultimo did this. I don't remember if it was Sue Kamei or UT, but he did this really gross, grapevine inverted surfboard case that I just like stood. I actually paused the feed when I was watching this, stood up, and I just like turned my head for a second. I was like, that just sucks. Like he tied him into a knot that sucks. And this was like the one match that I wouldn't say overachieve or underachieve. This match hit its ceiling at 3.5 stars, and it was a absolute blast of 10 minutes. And hey, as Kamei's one of Kamei's biggest fans, great match here. Like this is the kind of stuff I want to see Funky Jackie Kamei do more often.
Look, when Kamei returned from injury, you know, he had that really rough outing at the June Corican Hall show. It was him and Gamma against Arakan and Saito, and Kamei messed up the finish, and he made one mistake, and then he's young, so he panicked, and then he made another mistake, and then they finally got to the finish, and he got out of the ring. And he didn't really recover super quick. I mean, he had the singles match at Kobe Sambo Hall with Masaki Mochizuki, which I really liked, and I felt like I was maybe higher on that match than other people. But he wasn't really inspiring confidence when he returned from injury and really started to take over this gimmick. And we talked about, you know, is it the gear that's holding him back? And he still has the Taiji Ishimori overall style gear, but now he's changed from black to white, which I do think is an improvement. And there is a level of confidence that he's starting to find that is really noticeable, because I don't know if he wrestled the summer months with confidence. I think he was rattled. I don't think he was entirely healthy, either physically or to some extent mentally, and I think it showed in his performance. But over the past month, he has been the FJK that I have wanted him to be, the guy that we saw so much potential in 2020, and he's always been your guy. I have said since match one, look, I'm a Kento Kabune SBK guy. I'm going to ride him to the top of the card. You have found comfort in Turtle Chan, and I salute you for that. I'm going to hop on your coattails here, because I thought he was just marvelous in this match. You said best. He wanted that smoke, and he got it from Doi. He got it from Mochizuki, and he got it from Ultimo. And then there's our man, UT. And I said this last week. I said this in my review. I'll say it here. I am blown away at just how good of a professional wrestler he has become. I am blown away by how hard Ultimo Dragon works, specifically when he's in the ring with UT. I am blown away at his chemistry with Masaki Mochizuki. I love this guy. And this is a guy that if you'd have asked me 3 or 4 years ago, I would have shooed him away. I would have said, we're good. We've got enough young talent. No, I was so wrong about UT, and I am so happy to be as wrong as I was.
Yeah, and it's something that he discovered a new self over the last few years that has made him really, he's gone from being maybe the most expendable person on the roster, and that's even including a roster that does have Punch Tominaga on it, to now being the person that I've said before, he's the person I enjoy watch wrestle the most. Like whenever there's a UT match, I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get probably at least one move or hold that's completely new and very interesting. And he's someone that, like, usually when you have a small size, that kind of pigeonholes you into like, oh, you're gonna be an underdog or you're going to be a high flyer. And instead he's like, oh, I'm small, but I also know a lot of submission holds, and your body looks great to do, to basically make into a human jungle gym. So that's what I'm going to do. And it's something that it's not necessarily what you would think the Mike Spears ideal kind of wrestling is, but it's some of the more fascinating stuff. I mean, making me go up and pull up a lot of prime zones to go see like his special challenge matches, and they were absolute blasts.
What do you think about the finish here? It's obviously the natural vibes team with the youngsters, FJK and UT, but then you have Horiguchi taking the fall. He loses to Ultimo Dragon, and he loses via Lamahi Strawl, where Ultimo not only held the pinfall past the three count, he held it to just about 10 seconds before finally letting Horiguchi go.
Yeah, I mean, Horiguchi got his moment in the sun this year, and, you know, it's probably something that probably says something more about the near future for UT and Kamei, the fact that Horiguchi took the Law of Mage Draw when naturally that would have been Kamei's role, right? Like Kamei is the youngest person in this match by a good like 6 years. He's still coming up on his, he's not even coming up on his second year anniversary yet against Ultimo Dragon, the principal, the founder of the Dragon System. He's eating the Law of Mage Draw, but Genki just takes a lot of falls now. It's something where, like, I don't know if I said this on air or just in conversation with you, I would not be surprised if long-term Genki Horiguchi ends up being the lost post of the unit just because the elevation the youngsters in is just happening a little bit faster than I expected.
Here's something to put into perspective when we look at the age of some of these original class guys, when we look at who might follow in line with Masato Yoshino's decision going forward. Since December of 1998, which is longer than I've been alive, Horiguchi has at least one match on record on Cage Match in every single month from December of 98 with the Young Dragons Cup, which he won, through September of 2021. That is longevity, and that is insanity.
Yeah, and it's something really that, and it's not just that he works Dragon Gate. He'll do stuff around his hometown. He had that long run in Kyushu Pro, Susumu. He is just someone that, one, has been very fortunate about his health for the most part, and two, it just tells you, like, when we talk about how, like, this is a time that's going to be more important 5 years from now, because he's probably one of the next ones up to hang him up, and he's not going to be here in 5 years. So, you know, it's just something it's remarkable that for 23 years he's been this way and he's been this consistent. And I would love to see Genki have a match a month until he's finally done. Like, it's something that I think that every month he should, even after retirement, whenever they do a show over near him, doesn't have to be a Kunamoto, but it could be somewhere close, he has to come and do a match to continue the streak case. I think that's what he's fated to do until, you know, the bell tolls.
As I've said before, one of the smartest wrestlers to ever exist on a podcast over on the Pro Wrestling Torch Network, Alan Forel, almost made me emotional, as in tears almost coming from my eyes, talking about how Genki Horiguchi tries so hard at everything he does. He's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and I thought he was once again brilliant in this match.
Support for Open the Voice Gate this week comes from HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it is America's number one meal kit. In case, the one thing that really gets me about HelloFresh is the variety. Because I don't know if you know this about me, if I'm not forcing variety on me and my dietary habits, I'll eat the same thing every day, every week. I'll just shove it in my food hole. I don't care. But not HelloFresh, because HelloFresh offers 50 weekly recipes, including a wide range of flavors, cuisines, and ingredients. So I'll never get bored, and it forces me to try something new each week.
One of the great things also, and I say this as a very poor young man, of course, very successful in my field for my age, but still very poor, is the value of HelloFresh. It's over 30% cheaper than shopping at grocery stores with pre-portioned ingredients that ensure you won't spend money or excess food that ends up going in the trash. I was not a child that grew up cooking. It was not until I lived on my own that I really knew how to use a stove. Luckily for me with HelloFresh, Everything is simple to use. All I have to use is reading comprehension. Yes, it's a struggle, but somehow I manage, Mike Spears.
Hey, I mean, that's why we did all those standardized tests growing up, reading comprehension. And it's something that, like, for me, I always stress time management. And the fact is that you're able to get these meals done quick is something that's like, I might have to like make sure I watch an hour and a half of AEW Dark before we record case. But knowing that HelloFresh is going to be fast and easy makes my life so much easier. So go to HelloFresh.com/VOW14 and use promo code VOW14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. HelloFresh, it is America's number one meal kit. Moving on with the show, we got past the undercard, the first four matches, nine matches on this show, and then we had a moment case that is going to go down in history for Dragon System. We're not going to be talking, I think, 5 years from now about September 20th, 2021 as being, you know, Shun Skywalker versus Diamante, Kota Minoru. Maybe we'll be talking about Kota Minoru's first drink beat shot. But the first thing that's going to be on the top of my list will be the Hashi brothers' debut. It was Riki and Ishin Hashi versus Don Fuji and Yuzushi Kanda. Yuzushi Kanda got the pin on Ishin in 9 minutes and 46 seconds with his Gekka Dojo diving elbow drop.
Look, up top, I want to say this. This is maybe the best individual match that Jay and Ho-Ho have had on English commentary. I'm not married to that because Jay has done a great job in a lot of big matches, but this match right here shows the value of having Jay in the booth. Mike and I pride ourselves on knowing as much as we can, but at the end of the day, Jay knows everything, and I thought he was masterful in this match of calling the in-ring action, setting the historical significance of this match, and giving us backgrounds on Riki and Ishin Ihashi. Him letting us know that one of these guys are 25 and 26. Their parents made them basically go get a real job before becoming wrestlers. Holy shit, could you imagine if these guys weren't pro wrestlers? These two are such naturals. It would have been such a waste of time and life. It would have been a waste of life had these men not become professional wrestlers.
And it's something that I mentioned in like the news update I had early on. We thought that they were pretty competent in all the future matches. At least I did, Case. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I thought that they were competent.
No, I did, yes.
I thought they were competent, but it wasn't like I was being blown away by them. However, in this match, and just to echo what you said, Jay just like adding in like little like bits of information like, oh yeah, Riki originally wanted to become an actor and then joined this Japanese self-defense force, whereas Ishin went to nursing school and their mother talked about usually be super proud about having a son that goes into the military and goes into the medical field, but now they're pro wrestlers on top of that. Was just like something that only in this promotion and only Jay could give that line here. But
Jay sounded like a seasoned professional here. Like I genuinely think he and Ho-Ho are a great commentary team because I think they fit the tone of the promotion. But this was such a professional job by Jay. I was so impressed with him in this match.
Yeah, and getting back to like where they were in the future in Dragon Gate Future, which just this show might be someone's first show. Dragon Gate Future is kind of their version of New Japan's Young Lion system. They traditionally keep the rookies and the trainees separate. They used to have other shows they did. Right now it's Future, and they'd wrestle 5-minute shoot matches before each Kobe, and then now they've been doing the shows more around the country, but it was every Kobe area show they would have one of these matches. And Ishin and Riki Ihashi, they were solid, but it wasn't something like where immediately, like with you and Kento Kabuna, you're like, oh, I see who this guy's going to be. I see his ceiling. He's already shown that to me here. They often felt like that they weren't like outclassed, but they felt like that maybe some things weren't coming to them as naturally as it did for like Takuma Fujiwara or Hayakawa. But here, the switch went on. They came out looking like stars, come out with like a doing their father and their mother's pose. Ishin in the boa, he has to wear a boa for the rest of his career. It's a great look, especially with the black and pink singlet. Just a fantastic look for that. And they just have like a fascinating debut match. And it's something that I know, Case, we've said about this for years. No company really does veterans versus rookies like Dragon Gate does. And they did it here on a huge stage for someone's debut match. That this is a building that means a lot to the Hashi brothers and their parents. And going out here and having a 3.5-star match where it's not just like the rookies getting beat up. It's the fact that Riki and Ishin and Hashi are already solid pro wrestlers and coming across as like absolute stars. Like, bring back Summer Adventure Tag League and let these kids go rampant on that here. I am intrigued by it.
Look, we watched all of their future matches from the beginning, and I liked them. I liked the potential they showed. The last thing I thought I would be doing is coming on this show and talking about their undeniable charisma and star power. Obviously, those future matches are dumbed down versions of what they could do. It's young boy style wrestling. But those two came out of the curtain and were superstars from the first step they took onwards. It was stunning. I couldn't believe how natural and how ready these guys felt. And it speaks to the larger point I make about Dragon Gate. And it's not that anyone is necessarily arguing with me about this, but it is a point that I feel the need to reemphasize. And perhaps at some point, I'm just going to have to sit down and write an article about it to fully implant this into people's brains. But Mike, we talked about the eighth generation, the Dragon Gate, single spaced era, post OWE split, everything after the Strong Hearts exodus. There have been 10 guys that have made their official debuts since then. Kota Minora, Dragon Daya, Strong Machine J, Kenta Kabune, Takedo Kamei, Madoka Kakuta, Sora Fujikawa, La Estrella, and now the Ahashi brothers. And you look up and down this show, guys that have been in this promotion for a max 3 years. Some people like La Estrella that have been in this promotion for less than a year. And Minora's in a title match. And Daya's in a title match. And Strong Machine J's in a title match. SB Kento is a champion and a credible, legitimate Brave Gate champion at that. Before he got hurt, Hip Hop Kakuta, he was in an Open the Dream Gate match, the youngest man to ever challenge for the Open the Dream Gate title. La Estrella in a title match. Sora Fujikawa of this group is the one that has fallen behind. And that's because his face was nearly kicked off by Masaki Mochizuki. But Mike, if Fujikawa lives up to any of the potential we saw in July and August of 2020, do you have any doubt that by this time next year, not saying he will be, we don't have that crystal ball access, but would the idea of Fujikawa being in a Twin Gate match or a Triangle Gate match or a Brave Gate match, if his size works out, would that stun you if Sora Fujikawa is challenging or defending a title in September of 2022?
Oh, absolutely not. And this is something that, again, since 2018 and really since coming back from being behind closed doors last year, no company has set themselves up for what's going to happen over the next 5 years, more so than Dragon Gate, because the fact that we're talking about Sora Fujikawa, who had about a grand total of a dozen matches before he was injured and was already getting such a response to the they had to tell the crowd, hey, we're in a pandemic. You can't cheer right now. Like, of course, he could probably be in a Twin Gate match. And it's something that really, like, you look at this and it's different kinds of wrestlers and different kinds of appeal, which usually is something that Dragon Gate has its lane. A lot of the wrestlers, there'll be some outliers, will be in this lane here. But of the 10 wrestlers you mentioned there, almost all of them are completely different. They have different appeals. I mean, the fact that the Ahashi brothers got one of the largest responses of the night, and their big deal is that they are the first ever thoroughbred Japanese pro wrestlers. That's a unique route that has not been capitalized very well in Japanese wrestling history. And it seems like that Dragon Gate might have found the way and found the pair of guys that actually would be able to pull off the vaunted second generation Japanese wrestler.
And not all these guys are going to work out, okay? We might have already seen Strong Machine J's peak. We might be in the midst of La Estrella's peak, because if you look back at the generation prior, you know, unfortunately, Takahiro Yamamura did not work out, and he was the one from that class that he was the golden one. He was the one that was supposed to be leading the charge into the future, and for reasons beyond his control, it didn't work out. Katsumi Takashima did not work out. Oji Shiba did not work out. Not all of these guys are going to hit at this incredible success rate, but oh my God, the potential that they have. And Mike, the fact that there's more guys in future that we know of that haven't debuted, let alone the other kids crawling around the dojo that haven't even started working televised training matches yet. It's absurd to think about how good this promotion is. I'm not saying this next thing to put down any promotion. I'm merely drawing a comparison point. 10 guys in 3 years have come from this promotion. Look at the 21-year history of pro wrestling Noah. Look at what All Japan has done in the Noah Exodus environment. Where is the talent? Noah ran off dojo trainee after dojo trainee, and now they're left with Kaito Kitamiya, who I think is good, but I ultimately think will fail as a true ace. You have Masa Kitamiya, who is Noah's Hiroki Goto. You can like him, but you can't believe in him. He's a good wrestler who will never be a star. And you finally have some young talent there, but it's just not the same. All Japan just debuted the Saito twins, and everybody acted like it was the biggest fucking deal because All Japan finally had some dojo trainees that had a little bit of buzz, okay? Dragon Gate does this on a near monthly basis. It's absurd. You've got 10 guys here, and it's an unfair comparison to make, but Mike, we're pro wrestling journalists. We're the mainstream media. We control the narrative. 10 guys here, and in those first two original Toriumon classes, you had 10 guys between the first class of Shima, Suwa, Fuji, Dragon Kid, and Magnum Tokyo, and the second class of Arakan, Stalker, Horiguchi, Susumu, and Kanda. You better believe if this generation of stars pans out, I am writing an article drawing the parallels between those two, because I think right now they are in a very special era of cultivating talent. This group already feels more successful than anybody from Toriumon X. This group, as of right now, doesn't have the dead weight of the Yohei and Kenshin Chikano, and to a degree, Kotoka, that era pre-millennials. It was all dead weight. It was all clouded in controversy. And then you had the millennials, and yes, Eita's the face of the promotion, and yes, we just talked about how good UT was, and we're about to talk about how good Shimizu was, but you still have the cloud of T-Hawk hanging over that class. You have a special era here with Kota Minoura, who's 3 years into his career, and he just headlined a goddamn Big Five pay-per-view. You have Dragon Daya, who is incredible. Strong Machine J, who is flawed, but I see value in him. You have SB Kento, who I still think is going to be the ultimate face of this promotion one day. And you have more and more and more down the pipeline. And that's not even really talking specifics about the Ihashi brothers and how good they were in their debut, because they were phenomenal.
And not to belabor the point that overall in wrestling, we are seeing something unique and special with the young generation of Dragon Gate, the 10 wrestlers you mentioned. Compare it to their bigger competitor. Compare it to New Japan. New Japan puts out incredibly talented wrestlers. They also put them out like two every other year. And some of that is...
Well, and look, I struggle criticizing New Japan's dojo system because they're number one. So to a degree, it's like, okay, they're doing something right. I really can't pick on them. Whereas no one, All Japan, I feel a little bit more leeway to say, hey, maybe change it up because things aren't exactly going so well for you right now. But New Japan holds on to guys for so long. I mean, you forget that Sho was in his 30s. He's an old man because he's been wrestling since 2012. He was a young lion for so long, and then he went to America, and then he came back, and there is this slow, slow progression. And while I do love tradition, and while I do love the old-fashioned way of doing things at times, Dragon Gate just debuts guys with modern sensibilities. Like, we saw the Ihashi brothers work some dark matches and some exhibition matches, but ripped the Band-Aid off because they came out of the curtain and they were stars.
Yeah, and I guess like my overall bigger New Japan point is that the fact that it's so slow because they do have a couple ridiculous standards, such as 180 centimeters for dojo intake as a minimum, which is kind of, if you look at the average height of the of a Japanese male, you'll see why it's kind of ridiculous. But the, like, you look at like Riki Uhashi, and I'm just going to point to him for a second here. And he already has like a level of charisma and crowd presence that plays into the Dragon Gate fan base at a quicker rate that it takes forever, it seems like, to have people elevated and be ready for who's going to be the next ace, who's going to be ready for the next generation of their promotion. But New Japan, it feels like that they don't have the ability to elevate someone as fast enough because they are rooted in that tradition. And I think that's, I think that was a good point you're making about Sho.
Riki Uhashi is just gonna be so exciting to watch, and that's not taking anything away from his brother, who was also terrific in this match. But Riki has just I don't want to make any comparisons. It's not fair. He's one match into his career, but man, he just has some special charisma that I think is going to aid him for his entire career.
And that chicken wing dragon clutch he popped on, that should be his finish. That looked awesome.
Everything they did, I thought looked really good. Again, I thought you made a really good point where it wasn't just Fuji and Kanda beating up two young guys, and the alpha in us enjoyed seeing that kind of punishment dished out. This was a match where the Uhashi brothers brought just as much to the table as Fuji and Kanda did, and I think that's really important to note.
Yeah, and these are the two guys here. And here's my Galaxy Brain idea one. I'll be adding one more person to this proto unit as we go down the show here. They need to revive Fujiheya because of the sumo background, and he needs to be teaming with the Uhashi brothers as a trio going forward.
Yeah, look, I think the Uhashi should be following Fuji and Mochizuki, and hell, give Magnitude Kishiwada a call, whoever else. I mean, they need to be around those guys for an entire year, and they need to get the shit kicked out of them, and then a year from now, they can run through this promotion like nobody's business. For as many question marks, I don't want to say flaws, but for as many question marks as I have about this promotion, ultimately the thing that gives me the most satisfaction, because I'm seeing it pay off with Benkei and with Skywalker and with Ishida and with all these other guys, that I'm now at a point where I've been not only watching but covering this promotion for so long, that I am seeing guys who have made their debuts go on to have undeniable success. And that has become my favorite part about watching, covering, being a fan of Dragon Gate, whatever it is, however you want to slice it. I love that we can watch guys from the ground floor have that undeniable success all the way up the card. And whatever goes on with Yamato and his title run, whatever is going on with the Twin Gate scene, whatever happens with SB Kento and the Brave Gate belt, I have these young guys to fall back on, because I think the way they cultivate talent is so endlessly entertaining, because they are endless in the amount of talent that they cultivate. It's second to none. It's the best in wrestling. You might not like this style, but I find it undeniable to knock any way that they develop youngsters.
Yeah, and it's something that during dark times before in the promotion, it gets you through it. Like being able to like see like, all right, I'm watching this person progress, and then now 2 years later they're main eventing Dangerous Gate. Like it is a strong thing that with even some dissatisfaction I have with Dragon Gate right now, it's always there, and it's always exciting to watch these young wrestlers develop. So
absolutely.
Do you have any other points you want to make about the Uhashi brothers debut before we move down to the back half of the card?
Go watch that match if you haven't seen it. It is not a 4-star match, but I deem it essential viewing.
Oh, absolutely. I've rewatched the match twice since then, and I rarely do that. It was that fascinating of a match. The match after that was an 8-man tag. It was High-End versus RED, Dragon Kid, Keisuke Okuda, and Benkei and Kakatora versus BB Hulk Kai, the Brave Gate champion, SB Kento, and Dio Inferno. BB Hulk got the win in 10 minutes and 6 seconds with a final flash on Kakatora, in a match that I could very comfortably say this was the BB Hulk show for both good and bad reasons.
What the fuck are we doing, Mike? Oh, come on, man. I wanted this to be the build to SB Kento versus Dragon Kid for the Brave Gate belt. And I think we just worked our way into BB Hulk possibly challenging for the Dreamgate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely.
Here's the thing. He destroyed Kagetora in this finish. Like, this was as dominant of a win on this entire show as there was. And Takashi Yoshida pinned three guys at once. And that all was not even close to the level that BB Hulk destroyed Kagetora. And if it was just that in a vacuum, I would ignore it. But if we jump ahead briefly to the Thursday, September 23rd Sambo Hall show, it's Yamato and Ben K against BB Hulk and Kai, which, first of all, God, I do not want to watch that match. I am so sick of that combination of guys wrestling each other. But this is leading to Hulk versus Yamato, isn't it?
I mean, it definitely kind of feels like the direction they're going, but sadly, it does kind of feel like that's something that they're really interested in, which that's a choice.
Is it the choice I would make? No, but it technically speaking, it's a choice, and you have to give them that. You have to give them the fact that they are making a choice. I feel like I talked last week about how I think Kazuma Sakamoto was a good red herring of whether people were truly tuned into this promotion or not, because I think if you were watching from afar, you could see Sakamoto's name and you could go, it's not my Dragon Gate, no interest, not for me anymore. And you would be wrong in that assessment. Your opinion would just actually be factually incorrect. BB Hulk is kind of my other litmus test for that, where, you know, he's not the man he once was, and that is an understatement. Going back last year, watching all those Dragon Gate USA shows with you, one of the things that I learned very quickly was, man, I really miss a young BB Hulk, because that was a really fun wrestler to watch. I do still think Hulk has value. I do still think he can go at a high level in twin or triangle gate matches. Him in a main event singles match, and again, we're talking about something that isn't confirmed. We might be wasting our breath. I hope we're wasting our breath. But him wrestling a high-level singles match just does not seem like something he's capable of doing anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, in this 10-minute, 8-man tag, he was doing things that he shouldn't be doing anymore. That bizarre soup, like hangman suplex to the outside with Dragon Kid, for whatever reason, that just looked terrible. And another thing that like kind of gives me a little bit of pause about that match case that's happening on Thursday, they don't have a big show for about 6 weeks. The next big show is the Gate of Destiny in Edeon Arena, Osaka. If Gate of Origin was happening in October, I'd be like, yeah, no, just go run Hulk versus Yamato, do a Dreamgate shot in Tohoku. It doesn't matter. Fine. But the idea that there's all of this TV leading up to a full month's worth of TV, a full rotation, including a double Sambo Hall show next month, and it could be devoted around more Yamato versus Kai or Yamato versus BB Hulk for the Dreamgate, does not give me a lot of enthusiasm.
No, it's just, I have no interest in it. And it's the thing that, you know, unfortunately, We found ourselves in a position where it looked like Yamato was going to be dealt Benkei, Kai, or Mochizuki, and none of those matches really sounded interesting. I mean, Mochizuki would be fun, but the story would be weird. Benkei would be fun, but the story would be weird. Kai didn't sound fun, and that story had been played out. He's already beaten Shun Skywalker. KZ's hurt. Eita's Triangle Gate champion now. Where does he go? Like, I think Yamato probably won the belt at the right show for the company, but for him, much like in 2016, it was the wrong time to crown him champion, given things out of his control, given everything else that's surrounding him. Yamato just, for me, he isn't an interesting champion. I mean, maybe at some point, you know, we get Yamato versus Susumu. I like the sound of that match, but Susumu's Twin Gate champion. We can't get Susumu. We can't get Shimizu. Like, every time I turn to something other than whoever the next RED guy is, they are in a program that is already more interesting, or at least keeps them busy and away from the Dreamgate title. And that's how you end up with a possibility of BB Hulk versus Yamato, which, look, they've had great matches in the past. The first ever Dragon Gate USA match, Kobe World 2014, even the last singles match they had together, which was a Dream Gate match at Cork and Hall in February of 2017. So that match is on the network if you haven't seen it. That was a bizarre match because they did a ton of wild and reckless spots, and it was at one of those times where we knew BB Hulk was hurting, and we weren't entirely sure how healthy he was, and then he kind of threw himself. Yeah, there's a big apron spot in that match. He kind of threw himself around like it was 2007 BB Hulk, but it was 2017 BB Hulk. So the match was fun from a perverse perspective, but 4 years later, with all that wear and tear that Hulk's gone through, I don't need to see that again.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just a difficult scene up top to see what they would really do with. So the fact that this was this dominant, and with all the people that you laid out beforehand, it's just a weird situation, I feel like, with the Dreamgate going forward. And you know, when you're in a bad situation, you hand the ball to the ace, and we'll see what the ace can do with the hand that's being dealt with him to him this time.
I want to like this Yamato Dreamgate run really bad, because what did we spend our spring and summer doing, Mike? We talked about how good Yamato has been and how it would be okay if he won this Dreamgate belt. And then he won it, and I immediately went, oh, nope, I'm good, actually. I would like the belt to be on somebody else now. And it's not fair to Yamato, but it is how I feel.
Yeah, it's just the matchups that are realistic at this point aren't interesting matchups given Yamato and what Yamato's done for the last 2 years. Like, I still think Yamato has done fine, but it's just like the menu that's being offered at the Dreamgate restaurant case, this is not the menu we were expecting. And, you know, maybe I have been challenging my palate with HelloFresh, but maybe there's some stuff on here that's maybe not even too of interest, but I've had it before. And I remember what it was when I had it, when it was a little bit more fresh and a little bit more new. And I don't really need to revisit that Hulk and Yamato dish, do you?
No, it's lacking the variety that HelloFresh offers with your promo code VOW14. Maybe the answer is Yamato versus Kano for the Open the Dreamgate Championship. Because, look, I know there are perhaps certain people in the building for that would not be super into it, but I know sitting on my couch in Chicago, Illinois, USA, Yamato versus Kano sounds like a pretty fun match.
I mean, let's the punch dork look like he's a star for once.
Hey, Kano's done nothing wrong to me. One of the few bright spots, and no, I have nothing bad to say about him.
Oh, I have nothing bad to say about him, just the way that he's been booked and presented.
Well, it's almost like Noah's booking is the worst on the planet.
Just imagine it, if he could get over who he wants to get over in Japan right now, if he was able to book his mainstays, Noah would be the best promotion in the world for
you
us
know,
not
in
to
fairness,
watch.
No. Noah did announce a match today. I have to scroll through Twitter at a rapid rate to see if I can find it, and of course I'm not going to be able to, but it would not be an Open the Voice Gate episode without a check-in of Pro Wrestling Noah. That seems to be a reoccurring theme here. God damn it, they announced a match today that I'm going to watch, and now I can't find it. Here it is. Yeah, they're doing is there a date on this? On September, oh, maybe that already aired. They did Kotoge and Ohara. Oh, no, that's not the match. Son of a bitch. I think they're doing Kotoge and Ohara against Nozawa and Eita. Yeah, here's the match. It's taking place on October 10th. That's the match I'm interested in, is Kotoge and Ohara for the GAC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles against Nozawa and Eita. I will be watching that match. I think that sounds interesting.
Yeah, that match will be fascinating. That is,
because Ohara and Eita should bring out the best in each other. Like, Ohara. Yeah. I kind of wish, again, I talk about it all the time, how there's not a second tier juniors promotion right now in Japan, which I think it actively just hurts the state of wrestling there, not having a second option really besides Dragon Gate. And Ohara is one of those guys that if there was any money left in Michinoku outside of Sasuke Vanity Projects, or if there was wrestling in Osaka that could draw again, Ohara would be a perfect guy for that promotion. But he's stuck in Noah, and he's been stuck in Noah doing the same thing for like 7 years now.
I mean, he's someone that got cursed, but and where he went to train, when he went to train, you know?
Exactly.
I mean,
because he's better than the position that he's been pushed in for a very long time now.
Yeah, and just so people know what I'm referring to, he is an Ultima training. He is a part of the UD06 class along with Kazuchika Okada.
Yes, yes, very true.
So moving back to Dragon Gate and moving up the card, the special singles match was Shun Skywalker versus Diamante. This was a referee stoppage with a modified leg lock on Shun Skywalker's recently injured ankle in 10 minutes and 8 seconds. And then Diamante unmasked him and started wearing the mask around. Very proud of himself. Good for him.
I would like your thoughts on this match first. I wrote in my review that I had a really hard time sitting down and thinking about what I wanted to say about this match. Thus, I am passing the baton off to you to go first.
So I like when Dragon Gate does these kind of matches. Like, this was kind of reminiscent of the Yamamura versus Shima King Gate match, except on a bigger stage and longer. But I like the idea of someone just getting steamrolled because of an injury and someone just picks it apart. And that's what Diamante did. And the fact that they had this solid of a match, that watching it live, it did feel like something was up with this match. Like, it felt like it ended abruptly. I didn't know if it got cut due to time because of everything else was getting about 10 minutes and they wanted to have enough time for the two title matches after that. So that was like my first impression. But then discovering that it's a shoot and Shun's ankle, like, this is the best they could have done this. I thought that this was successful for this, but it kind of, like, Diamante right now, like, if Shun has significant time on the shelf, what does Diamante do after winning this match in this kind of fashion?
Challenge Yamato for the Open the Dream Gate Championship, ideally.
Okay, that's interesting. That is interesting.
Dude, I don't even say that facetiously. That's the thing.
Right.
I would love to see Yamato versus Diamante, because unless somebody can come at me with a name, and I don't mean this in like a come at me type of way. I don't know if I'm forgetting something. Please tweet at me at Open Voice Gate on Twitter if there is a wrestler more deserving of Most Improved Wrestler this year than Diamante. I voted for him last year, and I think he's going to pull a Miz, and I'm going to vote for him 2 years in a row, because he went from bad to good, and now he's gone from good to legitimately great. I thought he was spectacular in this match, because this was so different than what we've seen him do. Normally, he's just a base for Live Stray, and he plays his part, and he plays his part very well. This was him leading a grounded, submission-based match against Shun Skywalker, and it was super entertaining. It wasn't a great match, and I think that's where a little bit of my disconnect comes in, and I have that even more so in the next match, the Twin Gate match, where perhaps my vision of what I wanted it to be wasn't what the match became, and thus I struggled with how I felt about it, because I had an idea in my head of what it should have been versus what it was. I do know that this was not a great match from a star rating perspective, but from a storytelling perspective, they accomplished their goal and they did it in a tremendous way.
Yeah, I mean, hats off for that. So I said I had two Galaxy Brain ideas, Case. My first one, I already kind of previewed. It's an idea of a Fuji-led unit that's got the Hashi brothers in it and someone we're going to talk about in the next match. My other idea is, I think that they could build up to a double Apuestas match with this outcome when Shun comes back. I think they can do Shun and Daya versus Diamante and Daya Inferno, a double mask versus mask match.
Okay, that's super entertaining. That's very much a Galaxy Brain take.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. There's no way this happens.
Look, I don't think that's... God damn, that's good, Mike. Somebody needs to give you the pencil. And maybe not of this promotion, but of some promotion, because that is really good. I still think the move is that Ultimo is going to take Diamante's mask at whatever the next Dragon Mania is. And again, by all accounts, Diamante is a hunk who wrestles in a mask and a tank top. And I am blown away by that decision. I guess not a tank top, but a singlet. But I'm still blown away by that decision. So him losing the mask seems like it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I tend to believe my man Ultimo Dragon is coming after that mask, and Shun Skywalker is just kind of the vehicle to get them there.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, that's absolutely what I expect to happen. I just think it would be a lot more interesting. And usually on Excursion, you go and you do a big thing. Shouldn't get an opportunity to do a big thing like getting a mask or getting a championship in Mexico. This could kind of be that in a way. And
I think their chemistry is great. I would love when Shun gets healthy for them to continue to run with this.
Yeah, and you could easily tie it into the Dian Inferno feud that, you know, sometimes it's been cooled off to an extent due to injuries that might be hard to get it the juice to get over the line. But if you make it a double puestas, I feel like that solves it. I'm just saying, like, I could have a very interesting promotion if someone wants to give me the money.
If someone would like to pay Mike Spears and I millions of dollars to book an independent wrestling company, just let us know. Our DMs are open at Open Voice Gate on Twitter.
Absolutely. Then we get into the two title matches, or the two later title matches on the show. The first one is for the Open the Twin Gate Championship. It was the reigning champions, Natural Vibes, Susumu Yokosuka, and King Shimizu against the challengers from the Strong Machine Army, Strong Machine J and Strong Machine K. Natural Vibes retains to make their second successful defense when Shimizu pinned Strong Machine J with the King Breast in 15 minutes and 1 second.
So this is another match that I struggled with because I wanted Strong Machine J to make this match his. I wanted us to come away from this match having to talk about what he did here because he stepped up to the plate and he stood up to Shimizu and he stood up to Yokosuka, and even in defeat, he was so undeniably good that we would have had to have talked about what he did in this match. I thought he was fine, but I don't know. Did you get that overwhelming feeling that he belonged in the ring with Shimizu and Susumu?
Oh, he was the focus of this match, Case. He just was the focus on the opposite end. He just was getting his ass kicked, it felt like.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, that's what they're going to do with him? Again, you know, he was in the ring a lot. He certainly did more than Kondo did, and we'll talk about what Kondo did and how I'm still confused over that entire thing. But I don't know. I see the value in him. I like that he's here, but I'm just waiting for something to click with him, and it's just not happening.
Well, you know what could click with him?
What's that?
Well, he needs to join up with Don Fuji and the Ahashi brothers. We're doing a Showa era stable here. Don Fuji, the biggest fan of 70s and 80s Japanese pro wrestling, he knows how to lead the son of Super Strong Machine and then the first ever thoroughbreds in Japanese wrestling history.
I think that'd be great. I would love that. I think that would give Strong Machine J not only a direction, but a direction that fits his character. He needs something, because I don't know. I perhaps I'm too hard on him. I don't know what it is, no. But my stock on him is very low right now. I just, in a promotion where it seems like SB Kento and Kamei and Dragon Dia and even La Estrella has turned that ship around, and I see where he's going and I like his direction. I look at Strong Machine J and I just think, man, if people are passing you by. Like,
yeah,
people have passed you by. It's a bummer because I want to like this guy a lot, but I'm just not seeing it right now.
And it's something that we talked about the 10 most recent roster members. And of those 10, Case, I would say that probably nearly every single one of them, we could say, like, all right, this is their top form projection. If everything goes right, this is where they are, will be. This is what I expect their floor to be. And we have some idea about what the next 5 years, the next year, the next whatever could be for them. There is no direction whatsoever on what Strong Machine J could be at this point. And it's even more clear.
Yeah, I have no feel on his immediate future, no feel on his long-term future.
And it's something that I feel like I've talked about more recently. It's great that he is second-generation star. He is very talented in the ring, like technically as a wrestler. But it's almost at a point that being Super Strong Machine's son and having to be the Strong Machine Army is now starting to really prohibit him in a way, because this whole entire match became about twin magic stuff with the Strong Machines, Kondo unmasking himself and just getting pissed off at Susumu, which is, that is cool. The fact he's like, you know what, screw this. I dislike you. We're going to fight now. That is cool. But it's all like, it feels like he has no agency. It feels like he's just kind of like thrown in here. And that's why I kind of feel like he needs to go with like-minded people in a similar situation of someone who loves that style of wrestling and can be like the person that like he wants to really learn to be a roughneck wrestler in his own right. Team with Don Fucci for a year. And I think he needs rehab. I think they need it. I did not like the fact that Strong Machine Army came back. And I was always kind of wondering, like, what's it going to be like for Strong Machine J when he's away from the Strong Machine Army? And now it's something that I feel like it's a weight rather than, you know, a platform for him.
Yeah, and I hope that Kondo taking off his mask the way he did really puts the Strong Machines on ice for a little while, because I agree with you there. I don't think bringing that unit back did him any favors. For as awkward as the Benkei Dragon Daya Strong Machine J opened the Triangle Gate Championship team was, which is an easy thing to forget, also a team that won the belts from a team that had Kenichiro Arai on it, because you got to remember, pre-COVID 2020 was absolutely insane. For as awkward as that trio was, it was at least assimilating him into what I will almost call the Dragon Gate friend group, where he was beginning to belong to this community. And then he was, you know, he got hurt, and then it was like, okay, back to Strong Machines. He's doing his own thing. He's out in the wild. And that's just not what I want from this promotion.
Yeah, and it's something with him also that, like, when they've done out-of-the-ring stuff with him and, in, like, the Dragon Gate generation, he's incredibly charismatic. He's funny. Like he is someone that has a lot to offer. It's just, it seems like that the best thing for the first 12 months of his career was being Super Strong Machine's son and taking to wrestling, emulating his father like that, right? Like, it was awesome for him for the first go around. But then being Super Strong Machine J feels like it's been a detriment ever since then.
I think that's a very fair assessment.
But and it's something that, like, I should not feel this, I don't even want to say angsty, but this level of trepidation going into out of this match, because I love this Natural Vibes team. This Natural Vibes team is great, and I'm excited to just see where they can go from here. But it's just something that, like, when, like, this match is laid out this way, you kind of have a little bit of a better taste in your mouth.
Yeah, look, I'm stunned that Shimizu and Susumu retained. I thought, without a doubt, I thought the most obvious result of the night was going to be the Strong Machines winning here. And then Kondo took off his mask, and I went, what is happening right now? Like, I it took me a second to really process what was going on. And then Strong Machine J takes the fall. So I thought the back half of this match was particularly bizarre, and the first half of it didn't exactly light my world on fire. So, yeah, you're in a point now where you have a Twin Gate team that I like. I hope what's in store for them next is more entertaining than what we got here.
Right. And then we had the main event. It was for the Open the Dream Gate Championship. It was Yamato making his first defense against Masquerade's Kota Minoura and his first challenge. Yamato got the win in 23 minutes and 5 seconds after two Galareas and one Ragnarok to put away the youngster.
Kota Minoura does not miss. I mean, we are really witnessing the start of what should be an incredible career. He was, again, I've talked about this a lot, he was just kind of ignored because he debuted, one, in July of 2018, when at least in the West it seemed like Dragon Gate stock was at an all-time low, but debuting in between Skywalker and Benkei and Yoshioka, and then debuting right before Dragon Daya and Strong Machine J, who had incredibly hyped debuts, Minoura got kind of lost in the shuffle here. But since his debut, he's been a great wrestler, and his elevation over the past year, starting July 4th, 2020, when Dragon Gate returned with fans and he went to a 20-minute time limit draw on that show, a 20-minute time limit draw on the next show, and then from there started winning big matches pretty much immediately, through this match, because I don't have an issue with how he was handled in this match at all, it's been a near-perfect build. I mean, they have handled him so well, to a point where now the next time he headlines a big pay-per-view, and there will be a next time, it's going to feel natural. I'm not going to say I'm not going to be excited about it, because that would sort of dampen the mood, but it's going to feel right. I'm not going to bat an eye when I see Kota Minoura headlining a giant show, because he proved in this match that he entirely belongs in the ring with Yamato, in the ring with Mochizuki, in the ring with Eita, Ishida, whatever name you want to throw at him, Kota Minoura is just as good as them.
And this is like yet another like checklist thing. Like we talked about SB Kento having completing a mark on his checklist with regaining the Brave Gate title in that kind of match here. He didn't feel like he was out of his depth, as we've seen with youngsters in Dragon System history. Yamato played into Minoru's strengths when Yamato is someone that, like, we've seen enough Yamato Dreamgate matches to know how they can go and how Yamato is going to make you have his style of match. But instead, they complemented each other. And it really was like, it did not feel like a generational shifting moment. This was not like one of those matches that we walk away from saying, like, all right, this kid is now a guy. But this is an important match for someone to have at that juncture. And the fact that he just went toe-to-toe with Yamato for almost 25 minutes and came out ahead and came out like not looking out of the water, that's a win. And that's not to mention like the match itself. I felt like that the arm work that Minenora did leading up to the Engranaje and the Sol Nacientes, I felt like that felt natural. Like it feels like it, like that aspect of like his big match game felt natural in this. And I feel like Yamato, like it wasn't like performances he was having this summer, but it did not feel as awkward or stilted as 2016, 2017. So I came away with this thinking it was a pretty good success. I went 4.25 on it.
Yeah, I went 4.5. I loved the match. I talked about in my review how funny I think it is that the Dreamgate belt went through this phase for a few years where it went from Pac to Ben K. Obviously, you had Doi in there. Doi's a bit of an X factor in this, but then Eita, then Skywalker. And I wrote a lot about how the Dreamgate style had changed. You know, specifically, Joe Lanza is a big proponent of, you know, the Dreamgate match kind of has its own style, and they sort of ape the traditional Puro classic to an extent, which is very much a thing of Shima's era, more so than it had been with Pac and with Ben Kane, especially with Shun Skywalker, who I thought brought his totally unique flavor to that title. It's so funny Yamato gets the belt back, and we are... This match would have fit in 2010 Dragon Gate with Yamato's first run with the belt. Like, it was just immediately like, oh, that's right, we're doing 15 minutes of arm work, most of it's going to pay off, the last 10 minutes of this match are going to be batshit crazy, and they were, but this is no longer Shun Skywalker's title, the kids are done, we're back to Yamato having the belt, and this is what a Dreamgate match looks like.
But, like, that's what his character is, too. So it works on a lot of different levels. Like, Yamato's saying, like, hey, you know, the Great Reset happened, we're resetting back to me being on top, baby, and we're having my kind of matches. But I thought, like, Yamato is someone who usually, like, he'll do, like, the wrestle, and might not pay off towards the end here. He made sure to sell all of Kota Minoru's arm work, and it made some of the later Galleria's look like it was, like, an actual, like, chore for him to kind of pull them off. Like, I felt like that this was actually might have been some of the more responsible main event Yamato selling that we've seen in a decade.
Yeah, no, this was, again, this was tremendous. Like, this was a 4.5-star match for me with a crowd. It's probably finishing in my top 10 this year. Now, I don't think it was as good as either of the Kobe Dreamgate matches, either KZ versus Shun or Yamato versus Shun. But son of a bitch, this was great. This was really, really good. And it's just something about this show. It didn't click with me all the way. You know, I wanted the Triangle Gate match to be a little bit better. I thought it was very good, but I just, for personal reasons, wanted it to be a little bit better. You had the awkward undercard. You had the Natural Vibes match, which I thought was terrific. You had the Ihashi Brothers match, which I thought was terrific. And then you had that stretch of RED versus High End, Diamante versus Shun, and Natural Vibes versus Strong Machines, where maybe the matches were effective, but they weren't really great. And that added some weight to this show, that added a level of exhaustion to this show that, you know, by the time this match happened, you were feeling the length of Dangerous Gate, and it felt like a long show. But I don't want to undersell this main event. It's one of the best matches that I've seen this year, if not a top 10 match, certainly easily a top 25 match. And again, it's Yamato playing up the things that he does best and Kota Minoru doing what he does, which at this point, look, he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. If we do an SFM 50 this year, I'm not saying I have a ballot, but there's a person with the initial CL that votes for the SFM 50. Coach Minoru is going to do very well this year. I think he's been that good, and I think he's been that good the entire year.
Absolutely. And, you know, this gives us all the confidence that when it is truly his time, he's going to take the ball and run with it. And that was something that, you know, 15 months ago, Case, we weren't so certain about Kodama Inoue, like getting this big elevation. But the last 15 months, like, this is a great payoff, even though if it wasn't the true payoff.
Masquerade's an incredible unit. When you think about it, like, well, just what a unit they have become. I don't know if it resonates with, like you talked about since the beginning, I don't know if it resonates with the Japanese audience as much as it does with me, but Shun, Minora, Daya, Jason Lee, La Estrella, I can't ask for much more.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Oh, you're telling me, Mike.
All right, so that was Dangerous Gate. It'll be up on the network through the 27th. Really, even with it being not necessarily like medicine that goes down smooth, overall, I can't say this was a bad show. I thought there was enough on the show that I really, really liked. And, you know, I look at my ratings on the showcase, and other than the comedy matches, I didn't have anything under 3 flat.
No, neither did I. Now, I would say essential viewing for me is the six-man with Ultimo against the Natural Vibes team, the Ihashin Brothers debut, and the Dream Gate. Would you add anything or take away anything from that list?
I think the one match that we kind of deviate on is Shun versus Diamante. I really like that match.
Did you give a star rating to that?
4.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I think 3.25. I'm a full star lower than you. The one thing that I did love about that I did want to be sure to bring up, and I forgot about it in the moment, was Diamante sneak attacking Shun Skywalker with a springboard dropkick at his entrance. Phenomenal. I've never seen Dragon Gate, you know, obviously all the time they have the heels jump the good guys at the bell when they're doing the entrances. I've never seen them do that before. And it's one of those things that I'll just remember forever now because it stood out. It was something unique.
Yeah, like with that, like seeing that level of viciousness of Diamante and Shun Skywalker for like the style of matches he wrestles, he's tremendous at taking a beating and selling. And of course, some of that's probably a little bit easier because it was something legitimately hurt that he was selling. But it connected with me. And as soon as I talked to people and discovered, yeah, no, this is legit, then it kind of solidified it as like, hey, you worked around this match that I was told like this is like the best this could have happened with this match without it like going really short and having a fuck finish. And I feel like that given those parameters, it did all it could. And I feel like that was a 4-star performance. But I understand being like completely deflated by it at the same time.
Well, I thought it was super effective. I thought it was more effective than it was good, if that makes sense. But I have no issue with the match. Ooh.
I think that's totally justified. So that was Dangerous Gate. Check it out. English commentary will be up at least through the 7th. There's one more show this week that quick turnaround for them having to have that big of a major show. And then immediately, 3 days later, they return to the friendly confines of Kobe Sambo Hall on the 23rd on Thursday with Stormgate 2021. Okay, so I'm going to run down the card real quick, and then we could talk about what we're looking forward to on it.
Short list of things to be looking forward to.
I mean, opener, Natural Vibes, King Shimizu and UT versus Dragon Kid and Kakatora of High End. Match 2, unaffiliated trios, Ultimo, Mochi, and Doi teaming up again from Dangerous Gate against Yoshida, Strong Machine J, and Punch Tamanaga. Come on, Strong Machine J, go join Don Fuji. You see what the future can be without Don Fuji right there. Royal Sanbo participants this month are Horiguchi, Kanda, Shisa, Ichikawa, Sachi, Problem Dragon, Maria, Hoholun, SB Kento, and Hyo. Match 4, the Hashi Brothers versus Don Fuji and Shuji Kondo. Semi-main event, Yamato and Binkei versus BB Hulk and Kai. We talked about that before. And then the main event, we have Masquerade versus RED. 8-man tag, as we've mentioned before, Shun Skywalker's off these shows. We'll probably know more about his ankle injury this time next week. But it's Kodama Inoue, Jason Lee, Dragon Daya, La Estrella versus Eita, Kaito Ishida, Diamante, and Daya Inferno. So kind of rough at some portions here, but I mean, the main event in match 4, at least, there's some meat on the bone there.
Yeah, I'm ecstatic for the Ihashi brothers against Fuji and Kondo. I think that's going to be super fun. And I don't necessarily have a ton of preview thoughts about the main event. Minoru Lee, Daya, and Astraea versus the RED team of Eita, Ishida, Diamante, and Inferno. But we know that match is going to be good. I have no doubt that's going to be excellent. So the undercard does nothing for me. It's a pretty weak Royal Road, or Royal Sambo, for that matter. And I am dreading Yamato and Benkei versus Hulk and Kai. But there's two matches here that look good.
I like Shimizu and UT versus Kid and Kagetora. I think that'll be a fun
opener. I'm sure it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. I wonder if there's other stuff going on this day, because neither FJK or Susumu are on this card either. I wonder if they...
Oh, I think they are booked elsewhere.
Okay.
Yes. Let me... Mike, why don't you say something interesting while I look for this real quick?
Yeah, so that will close out the September schedule for Dragon Gate. The next time after this, they'll be on the network. They're going dark for a couple of weeks. We'll be Cork and Hall on the 7th of full production and with English commentary with Jay and Ho-Ho Loon. And then they have Kyoto on the 9th. They have a doubleheader in Sambo Hall the 16th and 17th. They have a... double shot on the 24th and Fukuoka on the 24th. And then they're off air for another week. Like they're scheduling this year. Like, I get it. And I know sometimes doesn't always line up right, but I mean, getting a bunch of weeks off here. I mean, they have shows of course, but it's stuff that they don't tape, like Ishikawa, Nano, Joima, Gymnasium, Ehime, Matsuyama, Sogo Community Center, and in Mie, Don Fuji's home prefecture. Maybe that's a Don Fuji basho. And
oh, ideally that would be nice. Just to confirm, you are exactly right. Susumu and Funky Jackie Kamei are going to be working for our friend Garuken Mask on the 23rd.
Hey, I mean, you make sure that the Don of Okinawa Wrestling is happy with you. I mean, they keep on putting off the Okinawa tours for obvious reason, but you gotta stay in his good graces if you want to come back there on vacation, Case.
Look, the last thing I want to do in life is get on the wrong side of Garuken Mask. That is not a life I'm looking to live.
No, sir. I mean, that is a guy that if you want to run a show in Okinawa, you are going through him. So if they want to do those again, I mean, Garuken Mask, I mean, he's in his 50s, but as we both know, age is just a number in the Dragon System.
In real life, age matters, but in the Dragon System, it's just a number. I just want to be clear. But yes, Garuken Mask did just turn 50, and he does have Kamei and Susumu booked for September 23rd.
I was not... Yeah.
my man Mike Spears, it's late in the podcast. He's hitting us with age is nothing but a number.
I was not making a reference to that.
This is equivalent of third hour of the flagship. All of a sudden we're 90 plus deep on to open the voice gate, and Mike's going, let me see if I can slip one by here, but no, my friend, age does matter.
Age absolutely matters. It absolutely matters. I just
look, Texas education system, I get it. Look, I'm from Indiana, I'm not doing much better, but we gotta hey Mike, if we don't hold each other accountable,
no.
Who will?
I apologize and I'll do better in the future.
I hear you, I'm listening, I'm learning, I will do better in the future. Type it up on the notepad, tweet it out at Open the Voice Gate, and everything will be okay.
Anyways, Case, anything else you wanted to hit on before we get out of here this week?
No, it is far too late. I do need to go.
Yeah. Before I say something even more dumb. And anyways, follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case at underscoring your case. You can follow me at Fujihaya. I mean, I guess I have not made a good accounting myself for the last 3 minutes, so... Anyways, that's going to do it for Open the Voice Gate for this week. Next week, we'll be back reviewing that Kobe Sambo Hall show. And what else? I'm flustered, in your case. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. We'll catch you next time. Take care.